and back it down to
this session of Gentlemen's College deals with alliances and how they might fit into your operation. It's sponsored by Pfizer. They're helping us put all this together. The format today will be that we'll have some opening comments. We'll talk a little bit about some of the changes that we're seeing in the business. And then we have a panel of people with us today who are closely involved with alliances today. They've seen many different kinds of them. They've seen some work and some not work. And they bring that experience to us today. And we're going to visit with them and talk with them about some of their expertise in this particular area. With us today, starting here, is Dr. John Patterson from Montana State University. And John is in charge of the Montana Beef Network. And it's a rapidly growing alliance that's grown over the last several years. Now includes quite a few cattle out of the Montana area that are moving from Montana into other feed yards and into packing houses. Ken Conway from Kansas City. Ken is the owner and operator of GeneNet, and he markets cattle over grid marketing situations with Swift & Company, and has been involved with GeneNet and with several different breeds of cattle over the course of the years, and has a great deal of experience in terms of working in this particular area. Tom Woodard from Broseco Ranches in Decatur, Texas. Tom is a veteran, I would say, of alliances. Tom was you can count on Tom to be an early adopter, and he is. And he's been with alliances for a number of years, and he's seen them go up and he's seen them level off. And he will bring some of that information to us today. And Patsy Houghton from Heartland Feeders in Nebraska has worked in the heifer development business and has been allied and worked with and for alliances during the course of her tenure there. And so we've got people here who get it done every day on the ground. And they see it come, they see it work, and they see what doesn't work. And we're going to try to bring out some of all of that. And if we could subtitle this session, it would probably be Alliances, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And we'll try to be as realistic as we possibly can so that as you evaluate what you want to do with your operation, you can have a realistic approach to the way you want to change your operation if need be or not, depending on how things stack up for you. So we'll start out this morning and talk a little bit about how marketing might be changed in the future. And I think one thing that we can talk about today is that we are in a period of time when generic beef is disappearing. The last survey that was conducted in the retail case across this country showed that 47% of the product in the retail case today was in the form of a branded product or a house brand or a packer brand product in the retail case, and the other 53% being generic. And that has happened over the last 7 to 8 years at a very rapid rate. Now, that number is a little misleading, and that's because the red case is not the same case we had 10 years ago. It's a case that has shrunken dramatically because of the movement of pre-cooked product into the retail cases that have taken up a lot of the space that we used to have for the raw product laying there as just a red generic product. And so the case is shorter and the brands have come on fast. And so the days of generic beef are shrinking on both ends, and we need to understand that. The generic beef that's left in the market is that portion that can't or won't be identified to an owner or a production system. And the brands, both raw and pre-cooked, are now dominating the meat case, and especially on a cost basis. The brands have a story behind them, and it requires certification of something. Each of these brands is, Gary Smith refers to them as a story brand. It talks about where they were raised, or how they were raised, or what their genetics were, or what area of the country they came from, and so on. And these brands have gone through some sort of a certification procedure in order to be able to accomplish that. Now, genetics we've got different kinds of genetics out there. The CAB, of course, has been the leader in this particular area and have been for a long time, and they've established the Angus brand. And we've got a number of Angus products out there that compete with CAB. At the last count I had, it was something like 27 different brands have the name Angus somewhere in their name. The process is one that is growing rapidly. How were the cattle raised? What was done to them? This isn't just about natural. This is about identifying what was done to the animals during the course of their lifespan and being able to document that for the people who are buying the product. And there's all kinds of variation here. There's everything from just normal, let's use all the technology we have, kinds of process, but let's document it, to the natural programs, some of the never ever programs, which are some of the most restrictive. The marketing plan in the future will involve producers managing their cattle to allow them to be used in the maximum number of programs possible. And this is one point I want to make to you today. I think too many producers, when they look at becoming involved in a branded program or in a supply chain, they think about just that supply chain, just that one that they're going to get involved in. And they try to structure their business so that they're qualified for it and so that they'll meet the certification for a particular program. And I would tell you that you should think broader than that. If you truly want to make your cattle more valuable, the more programs your cattle are qualified for, the more they're worth. Because the more ways the packer can send that product when he breaks it down, more than just the one supply chain perhaps that you were targeted at. And so this is going to require you to understand requirements and specifications of the various programs. And so that's going to take some work and some time, but nonetheless it needs to be done as part of your marketing plan. And let me give you an example. You might have calves that were black, and so they're going to qualify for CAD and all the other Angus programs. If you can age validate them, then those cattle are export market eligible for Japan. If they can be produced without antibiotics or growth implants, then they can go into natural feeding programs in European markets if you've got the appropriate documentation and qualification for your operation. Now think about that. You're sending your calves in. They're going to be harvested in a packing house. Part of that product is going to go to CAB or some other Angus program because of their color. We can send the cuts that Japan wants out of that same animal to Japan because we've got them age validated. And then because we didn't use any antibiotics or growth promoters in this particular example, we could move a lot of the rest of the product into natural programs, even if it's natural hamburger, any kind of program like that, and we've got product we can send to Europe at the same time. Now, how much more valuable is that animal to a packer, to a feeder, if you've got him qualified for all those programs, when they break him down, they can get maximum utilization out of the carcass. In many of the programs that we run, they'll qualify for a given program, but that program may only require 20% of the carcass or 30% of the carcass or 40% of the carcass, depending on the program. But if you can make that animal hit multiple targets out there, then you can use a higher percentage of that carcass and have a correspondingly higher value. If you can identify them to the range of origin, they're source verified, and if you do some of these other things, they'll be source verified automatically because that's where the documentation has to start. A set of calves like that would have a maximum opportunity to get multiple programs where premiums are being paid. What you have to do, what your job is to not think so much about the premiums. Of course, you need to know what they are because that's the target. But what are the costs of attaining that premium? Can you adjust your program? Can you incur the costs that are embedded here in order to be able to justify the premiums that are being offered? And that's a calculation that each producer has to do for himself. There's no blanket yes or no that anyone can put on you and tell you that you ought to go this direction or you should not. It's going to depend on your operation, on what you're doing, the level of technology you're using today, what those costs are, and so on. And so these are the kinds of decisions that you're going to have to be involved in as you go forward. Now, the marketing channels, the livestock markets. In terms of marketing in the future, we're seeing a consolidation in the number of facilities for livestock markets. We're going to move approximately the same number of cattle through the livestock markets in the future as we have in the past. The demographics of the cow-calf business determine that. And we're going to continue to move those calves and put them in places where they can be aggregated and get into truckload quantities. And so the same number of cattle will move through, but they may move through fewer facilities than they have in the past. And those facilities today are in the cusp of change, because most of those facilities, the bigger ones, are having special sales to accommodate the cattle for these mainstream programs. And so you're seeing auction markets have special sale days for age and source verified cattle. You're seeing them have special sale days for cattle that are qualified for natural programs and so on. And so that allows the buyers who are running those kind of supply chains to set in and buy cattle that day that they know that there's enough in there that they can put together the truckload quantities that they need for their customers. Most of the markets in the future will have a cleanup day, and that's when they'll run the calves that are qualified for the generic market. Packers are making commitments to retailers and food service companies for these branded products to be delivered at a certain volume daily. I think you need to understand, as you think about becoming involved in this, is that the three characteristics of a branded beef program that are the most important to a retailer are volume, volume, and volume. In other words, you can talk to me about the story of your brand all you want, but if your truck doesn't back up to my store on the day it's supposed to and unload the amount of meat it's supposed to, you don't have a program. You don't have a product. I can't let that shelf go bare. And so volume is what drives these situations. And so when packers make commitments to retailers, and the volume is the key to that commitment, they've got to put pressure on the feed yards to source the right cattle. And so the feed yards that are aligned with packing companies that are running these programs are out in the country beating the bushes trying to find the cattle as well. And when the feed yards make a commitment, then they've got to become more active in direct contact with you producers who supply those cattle. And so it's a trickle-down theory, if you will. It's a movement of demand from the packer to the feeder to the producer for the cattle that will fit into these kinds of programs. And the encouragement to fit in a program is obviously the kind of money that they're willing to pay for the calves. And so as we watch this thing move, this is the way it's happening. And volume is what drives it. And the guarantee of volume is what drives it. Now, the contact between the feeder and the rancher may include helping him find genetics. There are programs like that today where the feeder actually becomes a bull buyer for many of the ranches that are involved in their branded programs. It may include pharmaceuticals that fit a particular program that are where the program has already listed the pharmaceuticals and which kinds can be used in terms of their production system. And they will also provide consulting help for the producer with a more direct contact between the feeder and the producer to begin with. One of the things that we will lose out of all of this is we're going to lose the ability to sit around the coffee shop and compare prices at the end of the year. Because with this multiplication of programs, any two calves, sets of calves selling price is going to be an apples and oranges comparison. Yeah, I sold mine for a premium, but I know I gave up X number of pounds of weaning weight in order to qualify for that premium. What did you get for yours? Well, I didn't get as much as that, but my calves were heavier than yours. And so it will be an apples and oranges kind of comparison, and we're not going to have the ability, I don't think, to one-up the neighbor like we did in the past. And it's probably the healthiest thing for our industry, because what it will do is decrease our focus on price and refocus it on profit where it's always needed to be. That should be the bragging rights in the coffee shop from the start. Facts and data will cause the truly great cattle to bring large premiums. And the cattle that have been getting by on perception to bring what they are really worth. That will be a hard lesson for some people who have had the perception that they had great cattle. The people who had facts and data to know they had great cattle have been getting premium monies for a long time. And so facts and data will drive a great deal more of our business in the strain scenarios than what we have in the past. So if you're going to protect your investment, you might want to find out where your calves fit. You might want to find out what facts and data really can be generated on your cattle, and then study the various alliances to try to determine where those cattle would fit. And what I would tell you is that it's not a one-size-fits-all. If you look across the length and breadth of the alliances that are in operation today, you don't have to all raise the same kind of cattle. They don't all have to be the same thing. They don't all have to be raised in the same process. There are alliances for lots of different kinds of product because we have lots of different kinds of consumers. And they want different kinds of product presented to them, and the alliances have catered to that. And so regardless of where you are in the country, what kind of cattle you raise, what your breeding program is, you can find alliances that will accommodate your kind of product if you'll look, if you'll spend the effort and the time to do the reading and the understanding in order to try to find those alliances. Thank you. I'm going to stop at that point and just use that as the intro for this rest of what we're going to do today in this presentation. And